الصلوات على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
So we start with Surah Al-Fatiha. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين. صدق الله العلي العظيم. Okay. أعوذ بالله السميع العليم من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين من الأولين والآخرين. آمين يا رب العالمين. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. So today we're going to be continuing the series that we have on patience, and the majlis today is going to be very closely linked to the majlis next week and the week after. And the subject for today's majlis and the next two is the fields of patience, areas of patience. Like we've discussed in previous parts, patience can be defined as the resistance given by a man on the road toward perfection against the forces of mischief, against corruption, degradation, confusion, all of this stuff. Now, we're going to work to recognize the various fields of patience, where patience and its practice is most crucial. Now, normally, if you want to study the domain of patience in accordance with Islamic teachings and narrations of Prophet and Ali Muhammad, as well as from the Holy Quran, where the practice of patience has been applauded hugely, it's been given a very, very high level. And the person who practices patience has been given a very high level. We need to do this to get a stronger and more solid understanding. Because if we say, if we think about this, there isn't really any doubt that a soldier or a mercenary, an ignorant soldier or a manipulated soldier or an ignorant mercenary in any battlefield that is ranked against the believers, those who are fighting for truth and for justice, and should this mercenary even lose his life for the sake of these orders issued by his master or a tyrant or a banker or a genocider, standing against the truth and force this for the sake of power, wealth, position, or special interests, or occupation, or all of this type of stuff, then such an ignorant soldier or mercenary would not be, in fact, practicing patience for the sake of human ideals, but would be, in reality, practicing a form of patience that is actively opposed to the truth. Now, superficially, we might look at some case, this type of situation, and some might present it as an example of practicing patience. If you just use an example of practicing patience, full stop. But it's actually the inverse, it's the opposite, it's antithetical to the true patience practiced by pious individuals on the road toward perfection for the sake of attaining closeness and abiding by the teachings of God. However, this is where it becomes interesting and why we have to go through this entire understanding of patience. Because if we look at the lexical, the linguistic, the lexical meaning of patience, then both cases can be deemed to be patience. So one fighting against the truth and one fighting for the truth, both can be deemed to be patient, but in their own relative direction. But in a case where patience is not practiced for the accomplishment of human perfection or ideals, it is actually practiced for the suppression of human perfection and human ideals. Here, the resistance that was made, like in this negative patience, the resistance that's made, not against the forces of mischief, against corruption, against degradation, but instead it's against the shining manifestations of human perfection. Therefore, that definition, that domain of patience, is not the domain as defined in the traditions or within the Holy Quran. We can therefore conclude that patience may be defined as a means of achieving perfection or excellence or exaltedness, where a human endeavors to make sincere efforts for the ultimate creation, ultimate goal of creation, which is to become an abd of Allah, a servant of Allah, a true servant of Allah. His personality ultimately becomes a manifestation of all of the hidden potential of the human talents and characteristics. In other words, such a person, if they are successful, or as they become more and more successful in this endeavor, in this task, they attain the status of becoming what we call al-insan al-kamil, or the perfect human being. At this stage, all of the internal and external objects that we've discussed in previous sessions, which all come together and are a manifestation of satanic traits, of satanic stratagems, satanic tactics, are all resisted by that person on his journey, always moving forwards. On this road, there are all kinds of dangers, headaches, obstacles, and more that await the traveler. The opposition that is provided by them varies in proportion to the traveler's location, movements, and duties. Now, sometimes for discharging a duty, one is confronted with a direct obstacle. Other times, he may be confronted by an indirect barrier on his path. So, if we take the mountain climber, for example, that we've used in previous sessions, someone who is trying to scale the highest peaks, his confrontation with rocks, with thorns, with wolves, with thieves, for example, are all tantamount to negative forces that interfere with his ascent. But by the same token, sometimes a beautiful scene, perhaps he finds a cabin with a comfortable bed. Maybe the companion that he is with is shaky or weak. They can also be negative forces of a slightly different sort that force or encourage the mountaineer to abandon his ascent. Furthermore, there could be times where it could be maybe he gets sick, or he has to care for a sick companion, or some other mishap may come along, which ultimately forces him to terminate his expedition. This last case can be regarded as an indirect obstacle in his path. And the analogy of the mountain climber is also true for the journey of man on the road to perfection. He is confronted with three types of obstacles during this journey. If the compulsory duties and obligations of religion, yani the wajibat and all of this, might be considered as instruments and steps required for the forward march on the road to perfection, the forbidden acts within religion may be regarded as a diversion from the straight path. And if the unforeseen bitter happenings of life at the time of restlessness and instability are considered responsible for slowing down and ultimately cutting short his journey, then these obstacles and opposing motives could be divided into the following three categories. Number one, give me a salawat first, please.
صلي على محمد وآل محمد.
So the three categories are, number one, desires and passions, which are responsible for the negligence of compulsory religious obligations. Desires and tendencies which encourage man to indulge in sinful activities, and unforeseen, unhappy happenings which result in breaking his resolve, his courage, and his steadfastness to continue the course. Patience means resistance against all three types of barriers, and providing moral courage, and the necessary momentum for the traveler to continue his journey ever forwards on the road to perfection. Patience is what gives strength and offers that resistance against such desires and tendencies that constantly discourage a man from performing his compulsory obligations and duties. Patience enables that resistance against desires for indulging in sin, in sinful, forbidden activities. It provides the zeal and strength to be able to tolerate the unforeseen and unhappy occurrences, such as, for example, what we have experienced in recent times. And sometimes, for some people, these negative, unforeseen, unhappy events happenings, they sometimes can threaten to break the determination and resolve of a person. They make them despondent, they make them lose hope. Now, with this explanation that we have just discussed, we can appreciate the context of a very important hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu, which was narrated by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, which is as follows. Imam Ali says that the Prophet of Allah has said, patience is of three kinds: patience in tragedies and unpleasant events, patience in the performance of compulsory obligations, and patience against sin. All of these above-mentioned occasions, events, situations, such as the occurrence of a tragic, unfortunate happenstance, resulting perhaps in the loss of life, property, or both. A situation requiring the performance of compulsory obligations and an alluring sinful pleasure tempting a person to indulge in a forbidden act. A type of patience is required where the human being could manifest or display the most superior and heroic potential of his hidden, exalted qualities. In order for us to completely understand these three types of patience, and given the criticality of them and the importance of them for the human condition and for the journey, we'll now discuss them in a little bit more depth. In this session, like I've said, we will cover the first, which is patience in the performance of obligations, which is also known as patience in obedience. Next week, we will cover the subject of patience against sin. And the week after, we will cover patience against unpleasant events such as tragedies, disasters, catastrophes, and the like. So now we move on to patience in the performance of obligations, which we also call patience in obedience. So give me a loud salawat and we proceed.
اللهم
صل
صل على
على محمد
محمد
وآل
وعلى
محمد.
محمد وعجل فرجه.
So all duties and compulsory obligations are all accompanied with some sort of headache or inconvenience. In other words, they demand a certain amount of effort and involvement, positive or negative, which are at odds with the easygoing and comfort-living nature of the human being. Starting from the personal compulsory religious obligations, such as, for example, prayer, namaz, or fasting, we move on to the financial obligations of, for example, homes, zakat, and sadaqah, as well as collective social obligations such as hajj, which requires the separation from potentially family and loved ones, sacrificing all the comforts and pleasures of life. And indeed, with the jihad, which is also in this collective social as well as personal, sometimes even self-sacrifice becomes a necessity. Of course, this doesn't match, or if we quote a colloquialism, it doesn't jive with the easygoing and comfort living, comfort loving nature of man. This holds true for all laws of the world, be they heavenly laws or man-made laws, be they right or be they wrong. In principle, the law itself has been a necessity, and for the same reason, it is accepted by mankind. But generally, nowhere has it ever been accepted as something convenient, desirable, or sweet by humanity. It's never thought of as something good. The same holds true for many common international conventions, regulations, even laws, the benefits of which are clear for everyone, and the violation of which can result in serious negative consequences. And an example of this that everyone can understand. For example, basic traffic laws. Passing through a red light results in horrible, or potentially can result in horrible accidents, sometimes even leading to loss of life or lives. Although everyone is fully aware of the consequences of violating such a traffic law, despite being aware of them, it's common that when someone is waiting at a red light, the inner human nature is not comfortable and feels a great inconvenience. Sometimes they even hear whispers which say, "Oh, this traffic light must be broken, stuck on red for ages." A similar case is when a person cannot drive through a shortcut. For example, where they live, at one point there was a road which was two-way, and then suddenly, for whatever reason, it was turned into a one-way. Now, because there is a sign which says that they cannot go, for example, down the wrong way on a one-way street, again, this makes them feel very uncomfortable. And they say, why did they do this? And you feel anxious, you feel uneasy, you feel angry when you see something like this. Now, the compulsory nature of the compulsory religious obligations, which are based upon the innate human nature, yani the fitra, the innate self, and are without exception designed and crafted to meet the genuine demands, and indeed are a means and an instrument to lead a human towards perfection. Despite that, it must be said that in practice, they require effort. And there can be illusions of great difficulties in performing these activities. For example, in order to perform the wajib, the compulsory daily prayers, namaz, a person has to spend a little bit time, a little bit of time. They must go and, clean their hands and their face before the prayer. They actually perform the wudu. They have to have the baseline requirements regarding dress code, and indeed the location of prayer. All of which must be in accordance with religious guidelines. And it's clear that even before the act of praying, all of these are in conflict with the easygoing nature of humanity. I mean, human normally would prefer, I need to do something, they just go and do it. But the way that the prayer and everything is constructed and formulated, you have to make sure that all the steps are done correctly. Even the pre-prayer steps like wudu and stuff, as we mentioned. Now, during the performance of the actual prayers, there is a need to control one's thoughts to achieve that presence of mind and heart strictly for prayer, instead of becoming preoccupied with other thoughts, worldly matters. Why is that picture frame crooked? What's that draft? Where's it coming from? Anything. Anything other than God, anything other than Allah. This is really important. Indeed, in order for a prayer to be deemed meaningful, acceptance by Allah is another thing, right? Allah operates based on your intention. If someone is trying, then Allah is the one who will accept. But for ourselves, for that prayer to be meaningful and indeed to have value for us, like tangible value for us, it's important to strive to ensure that all of the other thoughts and ideas, all distractions, should be as thoroughly closed off as possible. Now, in his really amazing book called Sirr al-Salat, The Secrets of the Prayer, Imam Khomeini, Qudus Sirruhu Sharif, may God bless his pure soul, describes the presence of heart during prayer as follows. During prayer, one must try to completely cut off the heart's preoccupation with worldly affairs. If a person is submerged in love and desires of this world, naturally, his heart is busy continuously from one involvement to another. The heart behaves like a bird, jumping from one branch to another. As long as this tree of worldly ambition and desires, which is sometimes called Hubbud Dunya, is in our hearts, it will behave in this restless manner. If by our struggles, practices, efforts, reflections, regarding the consequences, severe consequences and losses of succumbing to these distractions, if we can successfully cut this tree of worldly ambition or desires and reduce it, then our hearts would become reposed and be at peace, and it would take us towards that attainment of perfection. As a person tries to free themselves from the charms of this world, from the temptations of this world, the more he succeeds in cutting the branches, the roots, the stems of this tree in his heart, he will see that the result is that the presence of his heart will be enhanced by the same proportion, yani that same proportion to which he's fighting himself against this love of the world. And on this subject of Hubbud Dunya, love of the world, Imam Khomeini goes on to explain the term like this. He says there are people who do not possess anything at all of this mortal world. but they still could be the persons totally submerged in the love of the world. While on the contrary, one may be like Sulaiman ibn Dawood, Prophet Solomon, the king of kings, and possessing all of the treasures of this universe, but at the same time, not be a man of this world and be completely distant from it. Now, of course, achieving this type of state of heart and mind requires a huge amount of effort, a huge amount of energy, a huge amount of discipline, and it's a very difficult undertaking. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try and strive to it, and we should do our utmost to try and work on that. Another example is that of fasting. Fasting requires us to tolerate and to endure hunger and thirst for potentially long periods. Granted, over here in if Shahr Ramadan is in winter, it's very short. And but it's in summer, it can be very long. And to be fair, you hear people complaining whichever time of year it is. To resist and struggle against the appetite for eating, which somehow becomes more amplified even in Shahr Ramadan. To restrain the eyes from looking at forbidden things, from speaking forbidden things, to resist sexual passions and all of this. These are difficult tasks and they require a great deal of resistance. Now, just to caveat something, all of these negative things need to be resisted outside of Shahr Ramadan or outside when someone is fasting, whether it's Ramadan or not. But in Ramadan, obviously, the requirement potentially is amplified. It's amplified all the time. It's a big requirement. But in Shahr Ramadan, people are more diligent, if you like. So, in spite of someone having really appetizing foods and drinks, maybe they're cooking, to be able to impose on yourself a voluntary restriction to spend a long summer day with an empty stomach and dry lips, this requires a lot of strength. A lot of power, a lot of strong and resolute determination. Then you come into the idea of Hajj. Give me a salawat, please.
محمد
الله
صل على
محمد وآل
وعلي
محمد
محمد
وعجل فرجه. Then you go into the idea of Hajj. Hajj requires tolerating huge inconveniences in in just getting to the stage where you can get a visa, especially now as it's become extremely complicated and strange, not to mention the expense, which is ridiculous. Then there is that entire journey, which is potentially quite a long journey. You're potentially separated from family and friends and home and colleagues, and you join groups of unknown people, unknown companions. Now, if Hajj is performed genuinely for the sake of attaining nearness to Allah and for the pleasure of God, without any of these strange motives of leisure, such as, for example, oh, I'm going to go to Hajj, I'm going to do tawaf, and then I'm going to have a halal Mac burger. Or, someone goes to Hajj and they marvel at these opulent and decadent buildings, and they look at all of this luxury and the trappings of such. This too will require a great deal of patience and self-sacrifice. Because all the time there's people telling you that, oh, brother, you've done tawaf, mashallah, let's go and have a Big Mac. People do this. Moving on, we have the obligations of enjoining the good, amr bil ma'ruf, and forbidding the evil, which is nahy anil munkar, as well as jihad, which is striving for the truth. They require a great deal of hardship, sacrifice, fortitude, patience. Speaking the truth in the face of the forces of falsehood, of corruption, of evil, is one of the most dangerous, unpleasant, and bitter acts, especially more so in this time. Because speaking the truth now, you can potentially lose your job, you can be ostracized from a society, all sorts of things can happen. It can be thought of as being like standing in front of a tyrant who has an unsheathed sword ready to come down on the head of anyone who proclaims or promotes the truth. It can be thought like facing enemies who are the most savage of beasts, and the glint of their electrified eyes and their swords stun and terrify the heart and soul of a superficial observer, or to be able to offer resistance against the waves of corruption and diversion of a nation, a class, or of mankind as a whole. This is the hardest and most dangerous and most menacing task of all. Similarly, it's the case with other Islamic obligations, which are accompanied by headaches, hardships, inconveniences. But at the same time, and without exception, all of them are beneficial and essential as a means of guaranteeing the salvation and prosperity of humanity. Certainly, for those who have recognized this straight path, Sirat al-Mustaqim, for those who have tasted the sweetness of walking on the difficult road for the sake of God and the sacred and exalted aims of humanity, all of these difficulties are not real. They are not only tolerable, they're actually desirable. The same prayer for the men of God who have tasted sweetness of a fervent prayer and the remembrance of God, this is something sweeter than honey. The Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him and his family, at the time of prayer, would become restless and eager, such that he used to tell his companion Bilal, who was the one who made the call to prayer, and who himself had made great resistance and a sacred resistance in his journey towards the truth. The Prophet would tell Bilal, "Oh Bilal, please recite the call for prayer, the azan, and make my heart and soul peaceful." The same struggles for the sake of Allah, yani jihad, fi sabilillah, for the self-indulgent person, those without any insight for the ultimate consequences, is extremely harsh and undesirable. But for someone with high spiritual or high understanding, high insight, for example, such as Imam Ali, it is sweeter than honey. For Imam Ali, all the inconveniences and hardships in the struggle resulted in strengthening his power of resistance and steadfastness. He himself describes this truly astonishing state of his morale in Sermon number 56 of Nahjul Balagha, which is known as the sermon in the company of the Prophet, as follows. "Together with the Holy Prophet, we fought our own fathers, sons, brothers, and uncles. But all these unpleasant events had the least influence upon us, except that these increased our faith to surrender ourselves completely to God and made the hard things tolerable for us. But in general, these difficulties and hardships, as they are experienced by those with weaker spiritual insight, and for those who are not possessed of the required determination and willpower, they're deemed bitter and undesirable. Now, what is to be done regarding these difficulties that exist in discharging, for example, religious obligations? Since the offering of the daily prayer, the compulsory namaz, is difficult, presence of heart during the prayer, curbing the roaming thoughts, the wandering thoughts, the jumping from branch to branch. That's very hard. Since fasting, since jihad, since Hajj, charity, enjoining the good, forbidding the evil, and other obligations, since all of these require pain and are extremely inconvenient, then should all of these be declared invalid or void? Should we therefore be allowed to live our lives according to the desires of our heart, which is filled with the passions and the spirit that yearns for and indeed loves great ease, great luxury, and all of the trappings and comforts of life? It is here that the true Islam of Muhammad turns around and tells us resolutely no. Instead, patience must be practiced. Patience in obedience must be practiced against these passions that seek to lure the heart away from the prayer mat, from the masjid, from the altar, and lure the heart away and preoccupy it with countless amusements, making the entire notion of prayer something devoid of depth, indeed rendering it somewhat meaningless and perhaps even akin to a series of aerobic exercises. Patience must be practiced in earnest and with great resolve against these type of desires, and every effort must be made to ensure that your prayer is offered with presence of heart and mind, with concentration, with understanding. Now, this is both for them to be accepted by Allah, although, like I said earlier, Allah is the merciful, the compassionate. He will accept based on your effort. But the bigger importance is for how they impact us. If someone is doing a what we call like an express train prayer, then there is no value. They're wasting their time. They're not reciting anything properly. They're not reflecting on what they're doing. They're just doing a series of aerobic exercises on the prayer mat. And arguably, they're wasting time. And that wastage of time potentially can create resentment. And so ultimately, it becomes very easy for them to cease doing it. Rather, a person should keep trying, understand. And this is something within many Muslim communities, we don't do this. We need to understand what we're doing when we're praying. We need to understand what the prayer is. We need to understand why, for example, do we go into ruku, into the bowing position? Why do we go into sijda? Why do we go into sijda twice? Why do we recite what we recite? What are we reciting? So all of these are part of our practice of patience to understand what is the prayer so we can be better at performing it. Because ultimately, Allah doesn't need our prayer. We need it. And it is our way to reconnect with Allah and to enhance our connection with Allah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
So, by the same token, patience must be offered against any negative and potentially, you could say, extremist tendency that tempts us to enjoy eating or drinking on a hot, dry day instead of fasting. Patience must be practiced when in confrontations with the enemies on and off the battlefield, where the dangers and threats show their real faces, and there is a direct kinetic threat of the Red Death, such as what's happening in Palestine, what's happening in Lebanon. The pleasures and sweetness of life, the memories of children, relatives, the faces of loved ones, worldly trade and businesses, in one way or another, can attract the attention of a man, thereby weakening his resolve or attempting to distract him from the task at hand. And actually, when we listen to or we read du'as like Du'a Ahl-Thughur of Imam Sajjad talks about this. And at the end of this session, we'll be reciting Du'a Ahl-Thughur or listening to Du'a Ahl-Thughur. So please keep that in mind and reflect on the words. So, in such situations, a great resistance must be offered against these forces, these obstacles, and indeed all efforts must be made to remove such obstacles, barriers, distractions, and such from the path. Patience must also be offered in the face of an arrogant tyrant whose eyes are burning with anger and rage, and whose transgressions and corruption has pushed a people to the brink of a catastrophe. Such a tyrant must be opposed by every responsible individual. And in this situation, from an Islamic judicial perspective, this is actually wajib. It's a compulsory obligation for everyone to work to overthrow despotic regimes, of course, within their capacity and ability. Patience should always be practiced against insidious whispers of shaitan, who, with a plethora of deceptions, will try to, for example, close a charitable hand. He'll make someone think, oh, you know, if you say something, then you'll face a lot of difficulty. If you do this, you do that, you'll have problems. He always finds excuses. In terms of charity, he might remind someone or make someone think that their own personal needs should come above helping those who are more in need. Shaitan can incite desires for material things. And of course, we know the society we live in is highly materialistic and based on consumerism. And so shaitan really has permeated this society and this culture. You know, it's not just Western, it's in the East as well. You go to any of these Persian Gulf shopping malls with flags, you see that all, you know, all the time people are trying to sell you something. And these things that you're being sold, 9 times out of 10, they're pointless things, useless things, things you don't need. But you buy them, and then that money you can't help your brother, for example, who has lost everything in Gaza, in Kashmir, in Afghanistan, in Lebanon, wherever, Syria, wherever, Yemen. So patience needs to be practiced against this as well, because shaitan will incite desires for material things. I mean, people look at something nice and shiny. Humans like shiny things. Shaitan will also try and emphasize that, you know, you need to make sure that your own house is better, is in better condition, blah, 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 and not worry about someone else. Here, patience comes in and offers the necessary resolve, the resistance to such desires, to rise above such obstacles, to enable one to successfully discharge his financial, religious, and societal obligations. I mean, if we look at the lives of the imams, Imam Ali was famous for Imam Ali, Imam Sajjad, all of the imams were famous that in the darkest part of the night, they would go with sacks of flour or rice or grain to the houses of the poor. And they would give them. No one would know who's giving them. There's a really beautiful story of Saint Mary, the mother of Jesus, peace be upon them both, where when she was living in the Haykal in the Temple of Suleiman, there were many people that would, you know, she was cleaning the temple, she was doing her worships, and people would come to take blessings from her or to gasp for charity or whatever. And there's one story where one lady comes to her, and Mary is very tired. She's been fasting for a few days. She has one piece of bread. And this lady says to her that my son is very ill. You know, maybe you are. First of all, the lady says to her, "Are you Maryam the saint? Are you Saint Mary?" She says, "Yes, I'm Mary." "Then my son is very ill. My son has this problem, that problem. Can you give me something that he can eat that is blessed by you so that he gets better?" She gives him the bread. There's one lady who is like a supporter of Saint Mary, someone who works with her, someone who is a believing woman. And she sees Mary giving her this bread, and she sees Mary walking up. Mary's very weak, so she's in, you know, she like trips. And this lady grabs her and says, "Mary, why are you giving this woman anything? She doesn't need it. She's just taking it." And Mary says, "Don't worry. Don't worry. This is fine." Further down this story, this is so beautiful, that's why I'm dwelling on it a little bit. Further down, she goes into her cabin, and because of her patience, because of her self-sacrifice, Allah has left a portion of fruit in her room. Fruit that are out of season, so how would they get there normally? And then she eats and she's sated. And then the next morning, Zachariah comes along, Prophet Zachariah, who was known as the kafil, he was the guardian of Saint Mary. And he comes in and he sees this beautiful fruit. And he looks at the fruit, he says to Mary that, "Mary, where did this come from?" And she says, "Hadha min 'indillah, this is from God. Inna Allah yarzuqu man yasha' bighayri hisab." That Allah is the one who gives to anyone without any accounting, to his servants without any accounting, to those who ask for him to be there for them. And at that point, and I'll cut the story short over here, but to summarize, Zakaria then realizes, because he wants a son. His wife is old, he is old, he wants a son because everyone else is causing problems. He wants someone to inherit after him, and he hasn't actually asked Allah. So he then realizes that, let me go into the temple, and he asks Allah, and of course Allah blesses him with Yahya. So at that point, I'll kill that story. Can we give me a salawat and we proceed?
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
محمد.
اللهم عجل فرجه
So in all of these issues, Patience must be practiced. One should be patient in obedience and in the fulfillment of all of these commands, all of these duties. Resistance has to be offered against satanic whispers, passions that constantly call and encourage us towards transgression. And sometimes that's tra that transgression is just forgetting that God is there, that forgetting that Allah is there, forgetting our duties to our fellow man. Each case where resistance is offered has a special meaning and a special importance, which is in proportion to the magnitude and greatness of that specific situational scenario and the effort required. In one scenario, resistance might mean to be steadfast in facing the enemy on the battlefield, like for the brothers in Gaza and Lebanon. Or it may be in confronting the self. And sometimes it may be to struggle with the pangs of poverty and other difficulties and to be able to rise above them. Patience means to be able to offer resistance in all of these circumstances. Patience never allows us to surrender, to bend the proverbial knee, to be humiliated, to be insulted, to give up the initiative, and to become a prisoner of events and eventualities. Now we're just going to very briefly look at a couple of examples of patience in obedience in the lives of the imams. So when you read the ziyarat of the imams, one of the key things that we always say is, "You, O imam, remained patient, and this patience was practiced with pleasure for the sake of God. You accepted this heavy load of carrying the truth, and in spite of all of the difficulties and hardships, you delivered it to its final destination." Now, truly, the responsibility of guiding humanity, explaining to them the true way, resisting tyranny, resisting corruption and transgression, during the time of our imams, as in any time, was and is extremely difficult and extremely challenging. And it is a task that requires great patience, great determination. So, if the patience practiced by the imams would have been such that, although unhappy about the bad condition of their times, with their hearts bleeding for the worsening plight of the Muslims and Islam, indeed the plight of the oppressed as a whole, had they confined themselves to the safe boundaries of their homes without taking any real steps, any concrete steps towards the destruction of evil and towards the betterment of the situation and the society, then this type of patience would not have been anything of significance. It wouldn't have any special distinction, prestige, or honor. There is nothing special in inert behavior, and anyone can do that. And of course, this is what is practiced by the weak and uncommitted people. The prominence and glory which distinguishes the lives of the imams and the special characteristics which are repeated over and over when we recite our salutations to them, as mentioned earlier, was their patience in being obedient to God, no matter the cost. If we look at Imam Sajjad, many times people picture Imam Sajjad as being perpetually ill and perpetually quiet and not doing anything. Yet anyone who has read Sahifa Sajjadiyya knows that this can't be true. Because while he was living in very, very difficult, very severe circumstances with oppressors everywhere, especially following Ashura, he continued to give lessons to people. He continued to educate people. He continued to do the right thing, do what was necessary to discharge his duty, no matter the cost. So now we move on to just a couple of examples of the Quran and how it speaks about patience in obedience, because ultimately Quran is the benchmark. It's the main place where we learn everything from. So it's important to always yield back to Quran for understanding. Now, Quran in Surah Anfal, which is the chapter of the spoils of war, which is chapter number 8, verse 65, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he says, "O Prophet, rouse the believers to battle. If there are 20 steadfast or patient among you, they will defeat 200. If there are 100 of you, They will defeat 1,000 of those who disbelieve, because they are a people who do not understand. Now, this verse emphasizes the importance of offering resistance and being steadfast while confronting interior motives within the self, which are obstacles in the path of a soldier facing the enemy in battle. The patient people that are mentioned in this verse are those not necessarily with the fanciest swords or the biggest missiles or with the bunker buster bombs or the angry faces and the rhetoric of the enemies and the Red Death and all of this. No, those people are the ones who nothing will faze. All of these things, these flashing swords, these missiles, these bunker busters, these angry faces, these enemy shouting and screaming, memories of their loved ones, the pleasures and charms of this life, nothing can stop them in discharging their obligations to engage in hostilities on the battlefield, bloody hostilities on the battlefield, in defense of the oppressed. And none of the above fears or worries makes even the slightest dent in their iron will in obeying God. And if you look at the soldiers in Gaza, you look at the soldiers in Lebanon, especially, you look at the leadership, this is them. They are described exactly like this. And we are seeing the tafsir of this and happening in real time, because we are seeing a tiny, tiny group of soldiers. There's one video I shared earlier on today where there is one soldier and he's fighting off an entire team of Israeli soldiers. And the Israeli soldiers are frightened to even face him. They don't even dare come close to him. And in the end, the only way they can destroy him is by calling in an airstrike. These people are like iron. They are unbreakable. Their will in obeying Allah is next level. And these are the people who are really on that caravan too, to Karbala, to Ashura, and to Allah. Another verse, which is quite poignant given everything that's happening, is from Surah Al-Baqarah, the chapter of the cow, which is the second chapter of Quran, and it's verse number 250. And in this verse, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he says, and when they confronted Goliath and his troops, they said, O Allah, O God, pour down patience upon us and strengthen our foothold and support us against the disbelieving people. Now, this verse refers to a group of people, group of believers, who in order to discharge a compulsory obligation had readied themselves to confront the enemy in the battlefield. They're asking God to bless them with the spirit of endurance, of resistance, of steadfastness in facing the obstacles in their path, and thereby to bestow upon them the fruits of their endurance, which is, of course, achieving victory over their enemies, which is the oppressors. This verse is very clear, it's very explicit, and it really does explain the meaning of patience in terms of obedience. There are many verses like this. In fact, in the Quran, there are something like so many verses that discuss patience and the patient that it really is something that, you know, people should go and reflect on and study. This is one of the ways that we can understand this notion. Now, as is the norm in these sessions, it's always important to reflect and remember the Epic of Ashura and the infinite lessons that are contained therein, especially when it comes to this notion of patience and obedience. So before we move to that, give me a salawat, please. So earlier we had spoken briefly about Imam Ali, where he referenced the fervent and beautiful remembrance of God as being sweeter than honey. Yet in Karbala, we remember the son of Imam al-Hassan, the grandson of Imam Ali, Qasim ibn al-Hassan, who was a very young man. According to some accounts, he was 14, others say 16. Suffice it to say, he was a young man. Yet his level of understanding, of wisdom, made him realize and articulate that to make the sacred resistance on the day of Ashura, which would almost certainly result in his death on this temporal realm, in his martyrdom, was sweeter to him than honey. Now this we should really reflect on. we should think very deeply about it, because this indicates that the power of patience possessed by this young man against all of the desires that would have been fighting him internally. Because he's a young man, he's in the prime of his life. He's got his whole life, we say, he's got his whole life ahead of him. And that's internally. Not to mention when he went on the battlefield, the arrows, the swords, the spears, everything that attacked him externally. This is truly profound. And this reminds me of the young children of Palestine who stand tall against the mighty tanks of the Zionist terrorist occupation. And they throw stones at them, knowing the great danger they put themselves in, but knowing that this is more beautiful. And to go down standing is infinitely better than to live a life where you have betrayed everything and have succumbed to the tyrants. And this was the martyr Abu Ibrahim, Yahya Sinwar, Allah yarhamuhu, who even to the last moment of his blessed life never bent the knee, stayed standing, stayed resolute against the cowardly forces of the Zionist child-killing terrorists. He looked them square in the eye and told them, "You can kill me, but you can never corrupt me. You can never break me. For I have my strength and I have my God, and you have nothing, and hell is your eternal abode." وآخر الدعوانا الحمد لله رب العالمين والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
حسين مولايا يا حسين، حسين مولايا يا حسين. There is no life without Hussein. We'll never be bowed on this earth again. حسين مولايا يا حسين، حسين مولايا يا حسين. There is no life without Hussein. We'll never be bowed on this earth again. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Rejoice in his name and his sacrifice. Live in his way to see paradise. Journey to his land where he stood alone. This is the soil that our hearts call home. There is no life without Hussein. We'll never be bowed on this earth again. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Defeated the Yazid of our modern age. Martyrs have written another page. Still flags they fly on the dome of peace. Now is the age of no defeat. For there is no life without Hussein. We'll never be bowed on this earth again. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Murderous Daesh in Syria. Takfiri sons of Muawiyah. Enslavers of Zaynab returned in spite. The righteous and pure they desired to fight. The lovers of Hussein they arose with might. Martyred like Abbas yet won the fight. Takfiris forgot the words of Hussein. Will never be bowed in this earth again. There is no life without Hussein. We'll never be bowed on this earth again. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Look at the land of Afghanistan, invaded by tyrants again and again. The road to Kabul, it is washed in their blood, running like rats from a righteous flood. The great Satan, its future in jeopardy. Its influence soon will be memories to heroes they murdered with no remorse. Warned they have been of a certain course, for we will not forget and we won't forgive. Our martyrs will rise, surely they do live. Our battle cry echoes through struggle and pain. We'll never be bowed on this earth again. There is no life without Hussein. We'll never be bowed on this earth again. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Our tears are like blood for the land of Bahrain. The sweetest and purest are brutally slain. Our hearts, they are broken. Our love is so deep. The world utters nothing, its conscience asleep. Its prisons are filled with the lovers of truth. Many in exile, they've martyred their youth. Hussein's very blood, how it runs in their veins. But victory will come and dignity reign. The hands of believers must join in their fight. Our brothers and sisters, so painful their plight. That foul suffocation must never remain. Hey, help me not build that always their refrain. There is no life without Hussein. We'll never be bowed on this earth again. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Surrounded the enemy from all sides. Surely they implement genocide. Yet brothers and sisters of Palestine soon will no longer be occupied. Murderous slaughter of woman and child. Delusional fakers, chosen one lies. Never the children of Blessed Ibrahim. Rapists and pedophiles live on our screens. Now all the air's filled with angels and jinn, paving the way to end Zionist sin. The sword of the Savior, drenched in their blood, over and over, flood after flood. There is no life without Hussein. I will never be bowed on this earth again. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. There is no life without Hussein. I will never be bowed on this earth again. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Zionist footprints in Lebanon. Missiles, destruction they fall upon. Women and children, the fertile soil. Life, love and freedom they tried to spoil. But for the flag of Muqawama and for the passion of Ashura, rattling bullets ring out Hussein. We'll never be bowed in this earth again. There is no life without Hussein. We'll never be bowed on this earth again. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussein Maulaya, Ya Hussein. A place it is vacant, a candle expired. 85 tons and a new rage is fired. The furnace of hell will spread through the land. The rage of the Savior is nearer to hand. The flag boldly waves, cries Ya Nasrallah. The hope in our hearts to avenge Ashura. Our ears shall not hear, but our eyes they shall see. The truth of his promise is sweet victory. For there is no life without Hussein. will never be bowed on this earth again. There is no life without a saying, we'll never be bowed on this earth again. Hussaini Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Hussaini Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Witness the resting place of Sajjad, eyes filled with tears, our hearts are so sad. No adoration for Fatima, no love or respect for Rasulullah. Yet I see a future of golden domes, peace, love and justice within our homes. I see the return of our blessed Imam, Labbaik Ya Sahib al-Zaman. For there is no life without Hussein, we'll never be bowed on this earth again. Husseini Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Husseini Maulaya, Ya Hussein. There is no life without Hussein, we'll never be bowed on this earth again. Husseini Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Husseini Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Husseini Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Husseini Maulaya, Ya Hussein. Husseini Maulaya, Ya Hussein.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. اللهم صل على محمد وآله وحصن ثغور المسلمين بعزتك وأيد حماتها بقوتك وأسبغ عطاياهم من جدتك. اللهم صل على محمد وآله وكثر عدتهم واشحذ أسلحتهم واحرس حوزتهم وامنع حومتهم وألف جمعهم ودبر أمرهم وواتر بين ميرهم وتوحد بكفاية مؤنهم وعضدهم بالناصر وأعنهم بالصبر والطف لهم في المكر. اللهم صل على محمد وآله وعرفهم ما يجهلون وعلمهم ما لا يعلمون وبصرهم ما لا يبصرون. اللهم صل على محمد وآله وأنسهم عند لقائهم العدو ذكر دنياهم الخداعة الغرور وامح عن قلوبهم خطرات المال الفتون واجعل الجنة نصب أعينهم ولوح منها لأبصارهم ما أعددت فيها من مساكن الخلد ومنازل الكرامة والحور الحسان والأنهار المطردة بأنواع الأشربة والأشجار المتدلية بصفوف الثمر حتى لا يهم أحد منهم بالإدبار ولا يحدث نفسه عن قرنه بفرار. اللهم افلل بذلك عدوهم واقلم عنهم أظفارهم وفرق بينهم وبين أسلحتهم واخلع وثائق أفئدتهم وباعد بينهم وبين أزودتهم وحيرهم في سبلهم وضللهم عن وجههم واقطع عنهم المدد وانقص منهم العدد واملأ أفئدتهم الرعب واقبض أيديهم عن البسط واخزم ألسنتهم عن النطق وشرد بهم من خلفهم ونكل بهم من وراءهم واقطع بخزيهم أطماع من بعدهم. اللهم عقم أرحام نسائهم ويبس أصلاب رجالهم واقطع نسل دوابهم وأنعامهم، لا تأذن لسمائهم في قطر ولا لأرضهم في نبات. اللهم وقو بذلك محال أهل الإسلام، وحصن به ديارهم، وثمر به أموالهم، وفرغهم عن محاربتهم لعبادتك، وعن منابذتهم للخلوة بك، حتى لا يعبد في بقاع الأرض غيرك، ولا تعفر لأحد منهم جبهة دونك. اللهم اغزُ بكل ناحية من المسلمين على من بإزائهم من المشركين، وأمددهم بملائكة من عندك مردفين، حتى يكشفوهم إلى منقطع التراب قتلا في أرضك، وأسرى أو يقروا بأنك أنت الله الذي لا إله إلا أنت وحدك لا شريك لك. اللهم وعمم بذلك أعداءك في أقطار البلاد وسائر أمم الشرك الذين تخفى أسماؤهم وصفاتهم، وقد أحصيتهم بمعرفتك وأشرفت عليهم بقدرتك. اللهم اشغل المشركين بالمشركين عن تناول أطراف المسلمين، وخذهم بالنقص عن تنقصهم، وثبتهم بالفرقة عن الاحتشاد عليهم. اللهم أخلِ قلوبهم من الأمنة، وأبدانهم من القوة، وأذهل قلوبهم عن الاحتيال، وأوهن أركانهم عن منازلة الرجال، وجبنهم عن مقارعة الأبطال، وابعث عليهم جندا من ملائكتك ببأس من بأسك، كفعلك يوم بدر تقطع به دابرهم، وتحصد به شوكتهم، وتفرق به عددهم، وامزج مياههم بالوباء، وأطعمتهم بالأدواء، وارم بلادهم بالخسوف، وألح عليها بالقضوف، وافرعها بالمحول، واجعل ميرهم في أحص أرضك وأبعدها عنهم، وامنع حصونها منهم. أصبهم بالجوع المقيم والسقم الأليم. اللهم وأيما غاز غزاهم من أهل ملتك، أو مجاهد جاهدهم من أتباع سنتك، ليكون دينك الأعلى وحزبك الأقوى وحظك الأوفى، فلقه اليسرى وهيئ له الأمر، وتوله بالنجح وتخير له الأصحاب، واستقو له الظهر وأسبغ عليه في النفقة، ومتعه بالنشاط، وأطف عنه حرارة الشوق، وأجره من غم الوحشة، وأنسه ذكر الأهل والولد، وأثر له حسن النية، وتوله بالعافية، وأصحبه السلامة، وأعفه من الجب، وألهمه الجرأة، وارزقه الشدة، وأيده بالنصرة، وعلمه السير والسنان، وسدده في الحكم وعزل عنه الرياء وخلصه من السمعة واجعل فكره وذكره وضعنه وإقامته فيك ولك فإذا صاف عدوك وعدواه فقللهم في عينيه وصغر شأنهم في قلبي وأدله منهم ولا تدلهم من فإن ختمت له بالسعادة وقضيت له بالشهادة وبعد أن تأمن أطراف المسلمين وبعد أن يولي عدوك مدبرين اللهم وأيما مسلمين خلف غازيا أو مرابطا في داره أو تعهد خالفيه في غيبته أو أعانه بطائفة من ماله أو أمده بعتاد أو شحذه على جهاد أو أتبعه في وجهه دعوة أو رعى له من ورائه حرما فأجر له مثل أجره وزنا بوازن ومثلا بمثل وعوضه من فعله عوضا حاضرا يتعجل به نفع ما قدم وسرور ما أتى به إلى أن ينتهي به الوقت إلى ما أجريت له من فضلك وأعددت له من كرامتك اللهم وأيما مسلمين أهمه أمر الإسلام وأحزنه تحزب أهل الشرك عليهم فنوى غزوان أو هم بجهاد فقعد به ضعف أو أبطأت به فاقة أو أخره عنه حادث أو عرض له دون إرادته مانع فاكتب اسمه في العابدين وأوجب له ثواب المجاهدين واجعله في نظام الشهداء والصالحين اللهم صل على محمد عبدك ورسولك وآل محمد صلاة عالية على الصلوات مشرفة فوق التحيات صلاة لا ينتهي أمدها ولا ينقطع عددها كأتم ما مضى من صلواتك على أحد من أوليائك إنك المنان الحميد المبدئ المعيد الفعال لما تريد برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.